boys and girls, Dying Time is here.
That's right! It's Friday the 13th, Part 6
on Kill by Kill.
Greetings and salutations, Internet. It's your old pal Patrick Hamilton coming to you once again from Forest Green, a.k.a. Camp Crystal Lake, or as close to it as we can possibly afford. And this is the Kill by Kill podcast, where we are dedicated to celebrating the least discussed component of any horror film, the characters. We'll be unpacking all the gory details of Friday the 13th Part 6 in the hopes that a camper's untimely end is just the beginning of the jokes that we make about them. And as always, I am joined by the only person that I trust to help me win that corporate paintball fight that we've all been aiming to win this entire year, the one and only Gina Radcliffe. How are you doing, Gina?
I'm pumped. I'm ready. I'm ready to get out in that fresh country cool air of the Pinelands region of New Jersey with my little goggles and my headband that says dead all over it. Oh, yeah. I'm ready. I'm absolutely ready for this paintball game.
Oh, it's gonna be murderific. But we are not alone. No, we have yet another teammate on the Kill by Kill side, and you might know her from the My Bloody Valentine episode of Kill by Kill. It's the lovely and talented and married to me, Becky Wilson. How you doing, Becky?
Not necessarily in that order.
No, not necessarily in that order at all.
You really should introduce her as Becky Murder Is My Game Wilson.
Yes. I'm happy to be with you two. Again, I am sipping on my gin and juice. I'm ready.
I really should have started drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
you're going to regret it.
I am going to regret it.
I think we need to save the actually drinking while recording for probably various parts of Jason Goes to Hell.
If we started drinking for Jason Goes to Hell, we would be dead by the end of it.
Because how many bodies?
It's so many bodies, Becky. Yeah. It's exponential how many more bodies. Even from this, it's kind of nutty, but we will get to that. A lot of those are group kills. Speaking of group kills, we have some today. Our characters appear on screen combined for a total of 3 minutes, perhaps. And the distance of time that we're actually talking about in this episode is probably maybe 6. There's just not a lot of distance to cover, but you know, if we go too fast, it's not that fun. And you girls will back me up on that, right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Silent nod
pregnant
for my
pause.
Wife.
Pregnant pause.
A little too pregnant of a pause. All right. And so, like we like to do once we've formally entered a movie, is we like to give you a little body count. Who's still left alive at this moment in time in the movie? First and foremost, we have Tommy Jarvis 3.0. He's a mental patient in the sheets and a Canadian tuxedo in the streets. And then we have Sheriff Mick, or not Mick, but Mike. He's named after Mick Garris, the director.
I was going to say, is that an homage or a homepage? If you watch Oh Hello,
it's a nod. Yeah, it's Oh Hello. Yeah, you're right on board. It's totally after Mick Garris. And the character design here, in terms of how he's presented, he appears to be equal parts Groucho Marx and Larry Fine.
but very angry. Very, very constantly angry.
Yes. Oh, he is so pissed off from moment one. And he's pissed off at people who come into his sheriff's office. He's pissed off at his daughter. Mm-hmm. He would like her to behave and for her to listen and her to shut up and for people to stay away from her, first and foremost.
First and foremost, yeah.
Which is interesting because she looks like she's about 25, maybe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
She looks like she should be, you know, one of a hostess at a hotel bar, you know, where she's got the lot of makeup and the black shirt and the black pants and the black pumps.
Yeah. for those who don't know, we are discussing Megan Harris. She's the daughter of the sheriff and owner of the tightest pants in town. Mm-hmm. And we know that for a fact because the only runner-up would be her fellow counselor, Court, who has the loosest pants in town.
Holes.
The holes for days. I was telling Becky,
He, to me, looks like what would happen if Dial MTV sprouted two legs and started walking around.
He kind of looks like, I mean, I don't know, it's predating it, but he reminds me a lot of, from the first season of The Real World, Eric. Like,
yes.
The kind of, he went on to host Club MTV, I think, and he's just that sort of like, I wouldn't use the word sexy for this guy because he's not sexy, but just sort of that kind of like pretty boy lunkhead.
Yes.
He's got
that
a
Rob Lowe St. Elmo's fire.
He's got a cropped sweatshirt, which cracks me up because this is such an 80s thing that you see in a lot of movies that never was something you ever saw in real life. You never saw teenage boys walking around with the belly bearing football jersey, which is like another thing that the high school bullies always wore in teen movies. The belly bearing was not a thing that I saw in young men that I went to high school with.
No, the mullet
hair for sure.
Mullets definitely. Hair. That little strip of flesh around your stomach area. No, that was not usually on display.
To me, it was like he felt a little jealous of the Jennifer Beals Flashdance Grace shirt that we all got to wear.
Uh-huh.
He did his own spin.
Want to flash a little skin too?
Yeah.
It's a whole host of 80s fads that never actually reached any sort of real people. He's almost like a unicorn or a spaceship. It's something that only exists on a screen. Mm-hmm. But in real life, those things are very difficult to run across. He also has a dangly earring, which...
Rob Lowe.
Rob Lowe from St. Elmo's Fire, big time. And about a good half of the cast has poodle hair. So if we're going to add to the poodle hair pile, we would also put Sissy in there. Now, she's played by Renee Jones, who would go on to play Lexi motherfucking Carver on Days of Our Lives. So let's have some respect.
Patrick is a Days of Our Lives fan, for you listeners who are not aware. He kept up. He kept up with the characters over the years, just FYI.
I can't say that I kept up. They have not moved on. It's very easy to fall into old patterns when everyone is still there, still going through the exact same problems.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the problem. That's the thing with soap operas is you could stop watching it for a year or two and then go back, and it's like maybe a week later, as far as the plot is concerned, it's like, wow, I haven't missed a thing. It's like I was on vacation.
Yeah, it is again. Yeah, I know. Very comforting.
Yes. In my family, I was responsible for setting the VCR so that my mother could watch all 5 days of Days of Our Lives in a row, because she would generally miss it when it was on at noon here in L.A. And that meant I was the only one in the house who knew how to operate the VCR, which is how I ended up being able to record David Letterman every night.
And got hooked on Days of Our Lives.
And got hooked on Days of Our Lives I think it was, I liked to watch TV, and that was the TV my mom wanted to watch. And if I wanted to connect with my mom, that was a way to do it.
You had to watch her stories.
Right. It was that or get super into Mormonism. I think I chose
wisely.
Yeah. For me. Okay. Not for everyone. Right. Just for me. And poor Sissy has basically the female version of Court's hair. It's not too different. Yeah. It's insane the height that is going on in everyone's hair. And just to round this out, we've got our designated ginger of the group. We have Paula, who, little did you know, was third runner-up in Ms. Hairbow Model Competition of 1986. Well. That is a made-up competition, but I believe it to be very, very true. The thing about Paula that I find interesting is that she has a lot of costume jewelry going on. She has...
This is the one with the headband?
Yeah, she has the headband. She also has earrings that look like some sort of treasure that Indiana Jones would try to pilfer out of a cave.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Indiana Jones and the quest for Claire's boutique.
I mean, they are pronounced. There is so much leg coming out of Court's pants.
I know, it's amazing.
Why? What does, I mean, it's barely an outfit. Not even, did Nelson even go that overboard in terms of pant shredding? And why is everyone having to put on their headphones back on when they're about to talk to children?
Well, they make it very clear. They have no interest in spending time with children at the camp for children.
My favorite part of this whole sequence is when the school bus shows up and mm-hmm. they appear to be shocked that there are children on it.
Yes. And would prefer the tale of a murderer risen from the grave versus having to deal.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the second thing. That's the second thing that I need to talk about, but we'll get to that. We're still
we might as well just dig in right now, because the people that we'll be discussing in terms of their deaths are so disconnected from the action. We might as well just talk about it. They give this sort of, when I say they, I mean Megan. Megan gives what has to be the most influenced bit of backstory. It feels to me much more like a Freddy Krueger speech.
Yeah.
This legend that our parents say didn't really happen, but what if it did? That's what I
need to talk about. Again, how long after the events of part four is this supposed to take place? Like, it can't be more than, like, 7 or 8 years, right?
I mean, based on the chronology of how old we believe the character of Tommy Jarvis 3.0 to be, unless they've really aged him up and let's say he was 28 at the
right, but Megan's
the maximum that would be like what, 16 years,
right? And Megan's like, oh well, this was a story our parents told us, but they said it wasn't really true. It's like, you can look it up in the fucking newspaper. you could literally go to your library. You know, put some quarters in the microfilm machine, kids, ask your parents, and look up the story. And they're like, oh, this is like, she's talking about, oh, this is something that happened 100 years ago, but, you know, it was all made up just to scare children. No, that actually happened. Not only did it actually happen, it happened less than a decade ago.
Yeah. It has to be like 8 years.
You should have remembered seeing this on the news. That's like telling kids our age, well, you know, there was once, you know, a president named Reagan who was almost assassinated, but that was something parents told their kids to scare us into eating our vegetables.
I think it's trying to project that it's been like maybe a decade. Maybe a little bit more than a decade.
These characters would have been maybe, even then, these characters would have been like 10, 11, 12 years old at the youngest. And some of them look a little older than they could have been older than that, and they're acting like, oh no, this is something our parents told us about.
Yeah, it's a legend. It's a tall tale. Paul Bunyan.
Did you not have televisions or radios in this remote New Jersey town you grew up in?
Murder was so common that people don't even seem to notice.
Clearly. I mean,
if we harken back to part four, where Mrs. Jarvis is reading a newspaper, and the headline splashed across it is like, dozen die in slaughter. And she's like, dum-da-dum, that's on the other side of the lake. I don't have to pay attention to that bullshit.
I think it's somewhat contradictory, though, because the Megan character does make it sound like it happened 1,000 years ago. They were too young. But the Lexi from Days of Our Lives, what is her name?
Sissy.
In the jail, when Tommy says Jason's back, she right away is like, Jason from Camp Blood? Like, she remembers.
Yes. It's the one part of this that is seriously underbaked, is the legend building. But it's so light and breezy that they're just kind of playing on the fact that maybe for some people, this may have been their first Friday the 13th movie. That some of it, where, you know, you might not know every nook and cranny of the Friday the 13th films, but you're generally aware that there was a crazed killer named Jason Voorhees. I think that's what they're trying to trade on. It's a little awkward, but, you know, it's not as awkward as, say, Sissy's giant shirt dress.
Now, how much time had gone by between production-wise, not story-wise, between five and six coming out? How many years?
A year.
Just one year.
Okay. Part five came out in 85. This came out in 86. Okay. The amazing summer lineup of 1986, which is something of legend. It was pretty amazing. You have Top Gun.
That's a legend
just off the top of my gun. Top of my head. Gun. Top of my gun. Oh. You have Top Gun, you have Aliens, you have The Fly, you have Big Trouble in Little China. So, anything else in the sheriff's office that we need to discuss necessarily, other than the fact that Megan changes clothes for no particular reason? She shows up looking like she's gonna start dancing in a Paula Abdul video, and then when she's at camp, she's got giant
overalls or something, right?
And she's off the set of Blossom.
She is eyeing Tommy like a hungry man eyes a platter of barbecue chicken. I mean, she is just she is just like undressing him and then redressing him and then undressing him more slowly with her eyes.
Yes.
And then she is redressing him and spraying him down with water and then undressing him again.
Tommy seems to he has a tick. And it is when he's frustrated, he runs his hands through his hair, and he does it about 15 times in the scene. Like he's this is the thing that shows I'm frustrated, and he just constantly just grooms it back so that you know there's not a lot of hairspray involved.
Court also has a lot of eyeliner on. I'm noticing
for a dude at a summer camp. Yeah. Yes. Yes. For someone playing bass guitar in Warrant, no. He's perfectly fine.
That's true. Minimalist for that. Yeah. But yes, she is clearly... Well, I think it's, you know, I feel like her intention is twofold and she does it well, which is that she's honestly attracted to Tommy.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also getting her dad's goat.
Yes.
Totally.
And she seems to love to push his buttons. But she also wants those suspended pants.
Yeah. And they're so easy to push. I mean, this is a guy who could picture, like, destroying a fit at Dunkin' Donuts because they get his order wrong.
Yes.
He has a lot of bottles of beta blockers in his desk. I picture a lot of Ativan, some you know, some Alka-Seltzer, some Tums. He's a very tense and angry man.
Court has so many holes in his jeans. He even has holes in the butt of his jeans. It's beyond dressing. He literally looks like he went through a scissors factory. I'm becoming my parents from 1986.
Pull
your pants up. There are too many holes. What is the point of this? Who do you think you are? Why do you complain about going to church every Sunday? Everything that I heard from my parents in 1986.
To stop trying to watch Playboy Channel through the scrambled signal.
Yes.
Well, if you hold the dial right between the 15 and the 16, sometimes it comes in very, very clear. That's a trick. But it's hard to do one-handed.
Porky's was on HBO.
And yes.
They were one of the first families to get HBO.
Oh.
And Porky's was always on at 4
Yes,
o'clock.
Porky's was always on. And if it wasn't Porky's, it was Porky's Revenge.
Yes.
And if it wasn't Porky's Revenge, it was Porky's 2 the next day.
Yes. And I'd have my, like, I'd be 6 inches away from the television set because I knew as soon as my mom got home from work, I had to switch.
You had to do that, or you had to do that full body blockage. Yes. Like, I'm watching Davy and Goliath. It's okay.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is it's a lot easier for girls to sneak that maneuver than guys because you can walk away clean. Me, you could tell that that I've been watching something that I may not have.
Got to get that throw pillow and kind of strategically hold it up. Just kind of, you know, do that the quick little walk out of the living room.
When the kids all pile out of that bus, a lady dips out and says, "They're all yours." And she relishes that. Like, here's the devil's
spawn. Well,
she got
her SAG card doing this. This is what I believe.
Can you get a SAG card from one line?
Yes.
That's all it takes?
You can, yeah.
Yes.
You can.
So an under 5 qualifies
you?
That's
why I did extra work at first when I got out here. Because here I am with my BFA acting degree. Like, how do I get someone to notice me? If you get a line during a production day where they don't have time to do a casting session and they just have to grab somebody from the crowd.
Yeah.
That's how you got your SAG card.
Ah.
And I'm sure she got it and was like, I'm going to work the hell out of this line. And they will notice me and I will be...
Rocket to the top of nowhere fast. Oh, please tell a story ever so briefly of the guy who came in while you were you at the WGA or were you at SAG when he came in and asked a very simple question.
And that man was Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
Probably was. But yes, he did come in, and you know, and the Screen Actors Guild is actually set up a bit like a bank, where they're behind bulletproof glass to take your money, to take your dues, and perhaps they're just worried about so many disgruntled actors are going to come in and shoot them because they didn't make their insurance or whatever. I don't know, but it's a very kind of sterile setting, looks like a bank, and a bunch of us were in line to pay our $43 or whatever it was that we all had to pay if we hadn't worked that quarter. And yeah, he came in and said, excuse me, we should shoved his, instead of giving his check under the plated glass window, he gave her his headshot. She's a cashier, basically. Yeah. It's like, where is this where I go to become a movie star?
And I love that story. I love it. It's so delightfully
Everyone laughed
naive.
At him because yeah. How could you not?
No.
But it was also very, yeah, sweet. And he just came off the bus from Iowa thing. There yes. He is.
I just picture like the headshot looks like when in Mortal Kombat when you do the Johnny Cage friendship and he gives you the headshot, he's in the sunglasses and all smiling. It says like your friend Johnny Cage on it.
Yeah, there was a good chance there were sunglasses on in the photo.
The photo might have been taken at a Walgreens specifically for the purpose of a passport, and he had blown it up to an 8x10. Or he was in a smart sweater and collared shirt combo. Yeah. Who knows?
Or it was a composite shot where you have him like, "Hi, if I have glasses on, I can be a pharmacist. If I have a tie on, I am a business executive."
It's like
I have holes in my jeans.
It's yeah. Like what's his face from Ghostbusters? Kevin from Ghostbusters, where he's got the saxophone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got like a doctor's outfit, but he's like shirtless in both pictures.
Yes.
Shows a range. Oh my god, yeah, I just love the idea of a person showing up to what he assumes to be movie star registration.
Yes,
that's what I do. Is this where I've been given the correct information?
Well, he spent a week hanging out at a drugstore and nothing happened, so he decided to be proactive and reach for that ring himself.
Well, that tight sweater started to itch, and so he tried a different tack. So that pretty much brings us... We've run out of things to talk about that aren't...
Of these teens?
That aren't the bodies that we're supposed to talk about. The characters that we should be discussing. Let's get into some office politics. Because
some private Benjamin hijinks.
Yeah, complete with. Is this the first time that we've had like wacky music playing in the background during a scene in Friday the 13th? I feel like it might be.
I mean, certainly part five has some histrionic moments, but this is legitimate shtick happening.
Yeah, when that goofball music showed up in the very first shot of his head popping out through the bushes, all I said was, no. This is going to be a whole thing, isn't it? And it sure is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bargain basement stripes going on.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. Because you guys, it's your fault. You both raised my expectations because you're like, this movie's so great. It's so good.
Well, in comparison to five, it is. I mean, in comparison to five, it's Saving Private Ryan.
I mean, that being said, you watched it from the beginning just to get a flavor for it, and it got you laughing, you were enjoying yourself.
But it was campy and winked at itself. This, to me, was something else.
So this was kind of certainly in a movie that is very winking at the audience the whole time. This is probably it's probably the low point of the movie. Because again, it's characters that exist largely to be immediately killed off, and it just seems to be a very random scene, mostly to explain how Jason manages to acquire a machete, and also how he discovers that he is apparently now really super strong.
Clearly.
There's practically a, huh? That comes out of him.
Look,
if he
I
still
did
had
that?
Lungs. Whoa?
Yeah. There's just a cornball factor that isn't there to me than the first 15 minutes, which was more of a wink and a, we're in on the joke with you guys.
Yeah.
Even the gravedigger, I actually like him.
Yeah, even though he looked right at the camera.
He looks right at the camera and does this crazy muttering monologue, but it's so, you know, the
greatest
scene of every Shakespeare play.
I think my favorite line is, I'm a high school graduate. Yes. I deserve this job.
I earned it.
I believe him.
Yeah. Maybe there was a lot of competition.
That job.
The thing is, this is a highly prized position in this town.
I was going to say,
buried a lot of people.
In that town, grave digging is a booming business.
You've got to be good.
And we have learned from previous explorations into the wiki on other films that a lot of the people were buried right on top of one another, which means you're digging twice as far down to get both those coffins in. Unless you're just piling bodies one on top of one
another.
There
are a couple that are described as being in the same casket. Like, I think the couple from part three, there was a Debbie who was pregnant.
Yes.
And they basically described it as making it sound like she was in her casket and they tossed the pieces of her boyfriend on top of her in the casket.
Like so many roses.
Yeah, I think I told you earlier, Patrick, that sadly the wiki for this one is very scant on completely unnecessary additional information about the characters. Like, we don't know who any of their parents' names are, we don't know how they were buried, we don't know anything about what their lives were like before they showed up at Camp Forest Green. It's very disappointing. We don't get a very long, elaborate description of how they were killed, as like with Billy and Lana in part
they,
five.
They also have super awkward descriptions of sex that I really enjoyed. Oh, there's some people are unsure how sex works when they talk about it. It's kind of like I've heard some things and I may have seen a very weathered copy of Penthouse at some point, but I'm not. The mechanics? A little rusty on it. Kill, 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 kill. Break, 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 break. Well, hey there, hi there, ho there, killers. It's your old pal, Patrick Hamilton, coming to you to break up the action ever so quickly to take care of a little bit of business, and then we'll get you right back into the podcast. You know, we make a little bargain here at the Kill by Kill podcast where if you leave us a review on iTunes, we will talk about it here on air, especially if you tell us what your favorite kill is. In fact, Spencer Seams, a friend of the podcast, was ever so nice to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, and his favorite kill from the entire franchise is as follows. My favorite Jason kill is the one where he killed that person. You know, the one where the person died in a brutal way. Yeah, that one. It seems a little general. He might not have the tightest grasp on all the ins and outs of the podcast. That's okay. You know, that's fine. We love you. He loves the show, and we love you back. Speaking of which, Agent Billow, I, Maggie, there's a lot of consonants and vowels going on here, but this person leaves a lovely review for us, as does RJ47890. Thanks, everybody, for taking time out of your day. You don't need to do this, but, oh boy, do we appreciate it when you do, because when you leave us a nice review on iTunes, that helps us get seen and heard by more people to enjoy the show, and that's what we all want. And just one quick bit of business. Our friend Rodney Asher, who was on the last edition of Kill by Kill podcast, he could not, at the time of the recording, reveal his next project. Lo and behold, in the time that it took for the podcast to drop, it's actually now streaming right now on Shudder. It's called Primal Scream, and it is exactly what you want from Rodney. It's a deep dive into what scares you. And, oh man, all I've been able to do, because I make it a real habit not to watch Rodney's work before I go to sleep, but from what I've seen so far, it is super creepy, super interesting. And he gets into it. That is Primal Screen, and it's exclusively available on Shudder. If you don't have Shudder, people, you're missing out. That is where horror lovers need to stream right now. Anyways, with that being said, thanks everybody, and the body count continues. Kill, 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 kill. Break, 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 break.
But the actual characters that we are discussing in this particular section of the Kill by Kill podcast are as follows. We have Bert, we have Larry, we have Stan, Katie, and Roy. Now, Bert is our raging misogynist.
Oh, yeah, he's basically a sentient YouTube comment section.
Totally.
just throwing out every possible stereotype of the chauvinist pig right down to should have stayed in the kitchen.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not a nuanced portrayal. Let's put it that way. He would certainly be upset that they would have a Wonder Woman showing with all women in it.
Yeah, that would not be okay with Bert, Brent, somebody.
Bert. All of this because of a paintball contest. Right. Yes. Paintball, which is some sort of team building exercise with only four people, which is puzzling.
Very small corporate
five
retreat.
Total.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you play paintball with just five?
I don't know. It from the way the armbands look, it's Katie and Roy on one side, and then you have Bert, Larry, and Stan on the other. So you got one.
So it's already uneven.
Everything's uneven when Bert's on your side.
Well, yeah.
Because he's the alpha, and he also seems to be a giant dipshit who's running around the Pine Barrens with a machete.
You've also got Roy, and I have to admit, I related to Roy and his helpless fumbling around in the woods.
But I can't imagine that you do that much shuffling. He seems to have a sort of, it's almost like an episode of Benny Hill is broken out and no one's told anyone else.
Yeah, it's Benny Hill.
I did appreciate the breaking off the piece of wood from the tree and trying to attach it back to the tree. And it just crumbles in his hands. I actually laughed out loud that scene.
And if they had left it at just that, I think I would have a much better feeling for the scene.
Some genuinely funny slapstick. And then, of course, they just keep pushing it and pushing it, and then it stops being funny.
It's like everyone laughed at that, and they're like, well, let's film some other stuff.
Have him trip over a branch. Have him trip over three branches. How about five, seven, eight, 20 branches. 20 branches.
Do a hammer dance from that tree all the way over to that tree. Roy is the physical comedy of this, and I put that in dick fingers, of this particular grouping. We then also have...
He's the one who took the movement and clown classes of acting school.
He probably knows how to juggle scarves.
Yeah.
Like sure dollars to donuts, he knows how to juggle scarves. And then we also have Larry and Stan. They're the twosome that talk the most in this entire thing. And they have this whole rapport where Larry tells Stan that...
You're being a real ass.
Yeah.
Well, at least I'm not all ass. I'd rather be real ass than all ass.
There's a lot of fat shaming really going on and saying that he needs to be more as hungry for sales as he is for food. And there's like 25 pounds difference between these two guys. They're
look
not
at these two and go, well, clearly this man is enormous compared to the other one. It's not a Mutt and Jeff situation.
No, one is not a physical specimen and the other is, you know, Wimpy from Popeye cartoons. They basically, if you were to squint, they would look like the same fucking guy. My favorite character in the movie so far is Katie.
Lady executive,
who's the only competent motherfucker in that whole forest. And she has everybody fooled. She's got everybody's ticket. She's probably has the most outdoor experience of all of them. She's able to imbue all of this by barely speaking. And she's the only one paying attention. There's a lot of people that you might have seen before. Alan Blumenthal is the guy who plays. He's Larry. And he was also in War Games, and he's been on like every TV show of all time.
He's definitely that guy. I was trying to figure out without having to look it up where I've seen him.
And she's familiar too.
Oh yeah, well she was on almost every season of I almost said For Your Consideration. Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's Emmy time in town, and every billboard says For Your Consideration on it.
That's true.
So yeah, she was on Curb Your Enthusiasm forever, and she's been on every TV show for Evs. Oh my God, she was on Love Boat: The Next Wave. Good for her. She did a stint on Empty Nest. She was in the Further Adventures of Super Ted, whatever the hell that is. Oh, that was a voice acting gig. Yeah, she's on Pound Puppies.
Well, there we go.
She was on Benson. She was in the Private Benjamin TV show.
Well, that makes sense. I bet she must have played, what is her name? Eileen Stritch, right? That character?
No. Eileen Stritch? No.
No?
No.
She didn't play that version?
Eileen Brennan was in both the movie and the TV show. Oh, she made the transition. She played Private Carol Winter. And she seemed to be in every episode of that. She was also in Caddyshack. She's the female caddy in Caddyshack. So here's the deal. Let's talk about Bert's death, I suppose. Bert is, we learn he's been shot by Katie, and this has made his pee-pee feel weird, basically.
if it's non-existent. Yes, he gives him permission, he feels, to go off about women. And
stupid, she gets to be here at the retreat, blah, 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 and she should be in the kitchen and all that stuff.
We met. Pretty sure that Bert probably has a lot of disciplinary action letters in his HR file at Sales Co. or Globo Sales or whatever the name of the company they might work for.
What do you think they do? What do you think this company does?
They sell things.
Yeah.
They make sales. They sell paintball equipment, Patrick, clearly.
I think they would be better at paintball if they sold paintball equipment, to be honest.
They're trying to do quality assurance. I think they probably sell widgets, various plastic gee-gaws.
Yeah.
You could definitely picture Larry carrying around a briefcase with samples in it. Samples of what, we don't know, but he's very protective of that suitcase.
Yeah. Samples and a sandwich.
Exactly. A comically large hoagie style sandwich with toothpicks with olives sticking out of the top of it.
Oh yes.
Olives. A real Dagwood, this Larry.
Exactly.
Then, I was very pleased with this stuff.
Oh.
Because I felt like, oh, Jason, he's a feminist. He's a little pissed off by this rambling shaming of this lady executive. He doesn't have time for this.
Jason is done with your misogynist bullshit.
Yes. And maybe that's the gin talking, but this is what I felt.
If there's one thing that I get from Jason Voorhees whenever I see him on screen is the subtle down with the patriarchy that comes across.
Listen, he's a little too sex shamey though, I think, to really be really be qualified as woke AF.
Yeah.
True, but he takes all comers, and to be honest with you, there's not a lot of virgins in this forest, although I'm not convinced that Bert has ever touched a boob.
But it's done in such a delightful way of, it's the apex of him shouting and being a jerk that Jason comes in.
Yes. And just yanks him by the arm, throws him across a good 5 to 10 feet.
Yes.
His face either hits a tree twig and impales him, or he just hits the tree real hard. It almost looked like at one point they were going for a Fulci-like death, but it didn't quite work. Or he just smacks him into that happy face that's carved into the tree.
And again, much to Jason's surprise, he has, apparently being brought back from the dead, has made him really fucking strong. He can rip someone's arm out of their socket without even really trying.
No, he wasn't trying. Like, this is as big of a revelation to him as it is to the audience. So he's like, but it's really well-timed, that gag.
Yes.
Now, there is one thing that should be said here. There are two Jasons in this movie.
Okay.
There's the Jason in this sequence, and there's the Jason in the whole rest of the movie.
Why?
Get this, kids. Well, we're talking about fat-shaming Larry. So this was one of the first things filmed, and they screened it at Paramount, and the executives all came back with one big note. Replace Jason. He looks fat.
Well, I mean, compared to what? Compared to somebody who just crawled out of the grave? I mean, he may look a little
In a way,
suspiciously
I think you're right.
Portly.
Yeah, I think he's a robust human in comparison to the more skeletal version of him that we see, particularly at the beginning. Like when he first crawls out and he puts on that mask, it seems huge compared to his head.
Yeah.
And then in the other movies, the mask is more proportional.
So they reshot this stuff or they just had done this scene?
They had just done that scene. They sent it back to Paramount. They screened it and everyone's like, well, you got to replace that.
We cannot
Jason.
Have a rotund Jason.
Yeah. Huh. He's got too much junk in his trunk. And that's not how we roll. We need him to be a perfect specimen. And so they replaced him.
Note, is David Hasselhoff available?
Who's really hunky out there right now? Who's that guy who plays Dan Tana on Vegas? He'd make a great Jason.
Robert Urich would have made a wonderful Jason, God rest his soul. He would have brought charm. He would have brought panache.
Yeah.
The ladies would have really flocked to the horror movie scene much sooner. Sorry, with my blog, I end up inadvertently doing a lot of stuff involving Robert Urich, and I developed a grudging affection for him. He was basically the king of 70s and 80s television.
He was.
Yeah, he was everywhere.
So, Bert, RIPD, you won't be missed. I think everyone in that company is thrilled he did not come back.
Yeah, they're not gonna hold a collection for Bert's family.
No.
There'll be no 1986 version of GoFundMe to pay for a college fund for Bert's children.
I don't believe Bert has children. I do not.
No. Bert probably does not have children now.
He leads a very sad bachelor life.
Wait, see, now that you pause, because he's pausing the movie right now after Bert's death, he does look like a very well-fed corpse.
He still has a lot of maggots in his tum-tum. Let's put it that way. Compared to the way Jason was physicalized in other movies, I will say he looks a little on the portly side. He's not like a John Candy, but he's also not, the sort of stuntman. He looks like a stuntman who's gone to seed. Like a guy who does a lot of car gags, not someone who falls off of roofs or gets lit on fire. If we're going through stuntman parlance.
Which apparently we are.
I've known a fair amount of stuntmen over the years. I wanted to be them. I had seen Hooper. I thought they were cool. And so that happens. You kind of put them into categories a little bit. So yeah, he's a little bit chunkerific. But that's okay. I don't love him any less. But he got straight booted out of this bad boy. And so let's go back to Larry and Stan and Katie, because they're the next up to bat.
Yeah.
Literally, because Jason's going to take a swing at him. And
so their deaths are forecast. At least two of their deaths are forecast by her making, after she paintballs them and splats them with the red paint, she makes them put on the headbands that say dead.
Yeah.
So you know it's coming. And they're being very funny and winky about it here. Like,
they're very upset.
We're not gonna be subtle.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're amping up that music.
The goofy music is going.
Well, they may have sent a bunch of notes about fat shaming the guy who played Jason. The one thing no one sent a note to any actor was be more subtle with this.
take it down a couple notches.
We're aiming for less broad was not a sequence of words that was stated out loud, at least not in the evidence of the edit that we see.
Yeah.
So Larry, Stan, and Katie are all lined up in a row, and out jumps Jason. He drops down from a tree. Now, do we have our second Wizarding World of Harry Potter appreciation move here? Because he wasn't in that tree. And based on his looks, I'm not entirely sure he could shuffle up one real fast. He's not exactly in bobcat parkour type shape.
But remember, he just ripped a dude's arm out of his socket. You know, he could probably, who knows, he might be able to do some sort of Wolverine-esque, just, you know, you know, straight ground jump just 10 feet into the air.
Sort of like a Hulk thing where yeah. he just does a big hop. He doesn't really fly. He just propels his body.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get it. So yeah, he jumps out of the into a tree and then out of a tree unnecessarily, mm-hmm. or magically, you know, does a bamf on him, zags on him a little bit, and then we get Roy retaliating for the deaths of his three coworkers that he's just seen.
But you're skipping over what was fairly awesome, which is he doesn't just drop out of a tree; he slashes across all three of their heads. Which sure. is amazing.
A triple decap.
Triple beheading.
Yes. And for difficulty, this is way up there.
Yeah.
Is this the first time we've gotten a threefer?
Oh, yes. I mean, we've had a lot of get bunked situations, most of them being singles, but a couple of them being doubles. Here, we're upping the game here. We're going three, and not just shish kebabbing them. Just decapitating them
yeah.
completely.
And this is where, you know, my theory where maybe Jason had grown a little bit from the grave and realized, you know, equal rights are important to me. And I'm gonna get that Burke guy. I thought maybe he would spare her for a second. I don't know why I thought that.
She's literally in the wrong place at the wrong yeah. time because she's standing right in between Larry and Stan. So she was either, she just was in a bad locale, and she happens to be tall enough. Now she had,
well, that's what makes the triple beheading more impressive. Is that they are different heights.
He's got a bit of an up, down, up down. And a
down. Yeah.
He's got, maybe he's worked on his knife skills. He's like a chef.
It's possible.
Both Becky and I, when we were in a cooking class, we took a professional cooking class when we were working at Fox. And we both managed to knife half of our fingers in half during that class
yeah.
at any given point and end up in the ER.
You've got to make your blood sacrifice to the kitchen gods.
Yes.
If it's not that, then it's what I did, basically, like, slicing the shit out of your knuckles with a mandolin. Have you ever used one of those things?
Oh, yeah.
They're fucking brutal.
Yeah.
They need to have a movie in which somebody kills someone with a mandolin.
Yeah, I agree.
That would be quite a process.
I don't know what the setup would be. I guess maybe you kind of just grind their face into it. Oh, God, I just freaked myself out just thinking about that. Ooh. Jesus Christ. I'm not going to sleep tonight. Let's just move on.
They could remake the Matchstick Man as a
yeah.
So then we have Roy retaliating. He's gone full Mr. Limpet here with his physical countenance.
He needs to do, I mean, really the only thing he is not doing in this scene is the Abbott and Costello kind of thing, which is good because Alan already did that with the
yeah.
with the whole kind of thing.
He almost says ghost, but he doesn't.
Or running in place while making that Scooby-Doo kind of
yes, yeah say, kind of noise. Like a Scooby-Doo character.
You read my mind, Gina. And then he scampers off, and
scamper is perfect word for it.
Yeah,
he does scamper.
Yeah,
there's a wild gesticulation happening, and he is very sprightly. I'll give him that. He has a lot of bounce in his step, so he maybe he's a runner. I'm not sure, but
and he doesn't immediately trip like everyone else in these movies. He actually does not.
Because he already did a couple times before.
Yeah. I think before when there was no killer around.
Yeah, anything more than that, you really would have been testing the audience's goodwill.
Now,
as per tradition here on the Kill by Kill podcast, I have not watched the rest of the movie yet. But Roy doesn't show back up, right? We just assume that he died.
His corpse is found later.
His corpse is found later.
Yeah, I actually, I have not watched, I too am watching it scene, section by section, but I did kind of skip ahead to see what was coming. And yeah, evidently his corpse is later found.
So RIPD, Roy. You had one brilliant moment of physical comedy and then a lot of good tries. You get a medal of participation. And so that brings us to the part of the podcast that everyone both loves and dreads in equal measure. It's Choose Your Own Death Venture, where we are going to decide for each of us which death we would choose if forced in the deaths that we review so far on this particular podcast. And for our consideration today, we have get your arm yanked off of your body and your face smashed into a tree, a la Bert. Or we can be part of a triple decapitation. And or we could just shuffle off this mortal coil like Roy in some way that may have been brutal or may have. Maybe he just tripped and fell face first into a bear trap for all we know.
I cannot pick Roy for that reason. It's too many unknowns.
that's too much.
Yeah.
Okay. So what then, Becky Wilson, would be your choice if you were to choose your own death venture here?
I guess, I mean, the triple beheading people, it's fast, but they have that moment of knowing. They know it's coming.
I think everyone has a moment of knowing.
Does Bert know it's coming?
Well, he gets grabbed, so he knows that something's happening. Well, when Jason jumps out of the tree, the automatic belief is not, oh, this is the moment I'm going to die. It's a surprise that this rather husky fellow has dropped out of a branch on a tree.
Yeah, but he also has a knife in his hand, a giant machete.
He does have a giant machete. So but he could have been tree trimming for all we know.
You know it's not going to be good. I do like that the arm is cut. I mean, I love that camera shot where he holds up the knife at the end after he kills him and the arm is still attached. It was kind of great. So I guess for that reason, I'll choose that death.
You're going with Bert.
Yeah.
Now you also have to be a raging misogynist.
I know. It'd be something to try on.
Your mother's going to be very disappointed.
It's true.
Becky's mother was the first female mayor in Wisconsin history.
Yeah.
Oh.
So.
I know. And newscasters would come to our house because we were such an anomaly. Like, oh my goodness, a lady making decisions.
A lady mayor? Welcome to Mars.
I know.
There was a lot of solo machete chopping in that town. Let me tell you that. All right, Gina, you're up to bat.
Well, at the risk of repeating myself, I am a coward, so I would probably prefer the quickest death, which would likely be getting your head sliced off with a machete. So whichever one in that line of idiots was the first one to lose their head, that's the one who I would want to be.
Now, you're also condemning us, because it has to be three people, unless you want to choose two other people.
Don't put that kind of pressure on me.
I do not want to be on this podcast and you say yes. This was the kind of thing
this
that was going to happen.
Pay.
Yeah. Listen, we make life or death decisions here on Kill by Kill. That's what we're known for. Journalism.
I'm sorry, guys. I guess since you're both here, more or less, you know, wrong place, wrong time. Much like Katie. So, you know, I'm sorry. You can yell at me in the afterworld.
In Valhalla, we'll have words over beers. And so,
yourself?
Yeah.
Huh? You would choose?
What? That's what I was about to say.
Oh.
What I would choose.
I know. That's what I said. And you?
I'm not used to someone actually being here when I talk. Used to this being a monologue and disconnected voices.
Yes.
Yeah. It's really ruining my
Apparently floor. Shirtless, as I've heard by listening to other podcasts.
Becky, you've been married to me for well over a
decade.
This is
a strange revelation to me, Gina. All these episodes that he sits here in our home office with his shirt off.
Everyone
can I talk to you over here? I'm trying to create a personal brand for myself. People only see, they don't see me. They only hear me on the podcast, right? So, like, it's a theater of, remember theater of the mind?
Yes.
Remember when we were told when we were doing promo? Theater of the mind. That's what I'm doing, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. Talk to, okay.
So that
by gods.
Another fine episode of Kill by Kill.
So you're neither admitting nor denying the shirtlessness. You're either making it up.
Right.
To be theater of the mind.
Right.
Or you actually do it when I'm not in the room.
That I leave that up to the listener to determine.
Well, one of us has to be the sex symbol of the podcast.
I see.
Every podcast needs a designated sex symbol.
And I'm sitting here with a turby twist on my head. So clearly it's going to have to be Patrick, at least for this episode, who's just bringing the steam, bringing that heat that a podcast about horror movies just desperately needs. Yes. Just that raw animal magnetism.
I bring a lot of teen steam to this particular yes. podcast. So in terms of what I would choose, you know what? I'm gonna wing it. I've chosen a lot of outrageous deaths and a lot of easy deaths so far. I'm gonna roll the dice. I'm gonna go for Roy. Because at least I would have had a lovely run through the forest and gotten some good
adrenaline
air.
Would be a
yeah. And
maybe you'd have a little rush.
He looks very physically fit and maybe he has, a good chance of possibly out shuffling Jason Voorhees. Unfortunately, he doesn't at the end.
Especially Fat Elvis Jason Voorhees.
Which would we put on a stamp? Skinny Elvis Jason or Fat Elvis Jason?
You could also think of him as Jim Morrison in Paris Jason.
There we go.
There you go. Yeah. There's a lot of different Jasons out there. These are the Jasons I know. These are the Jasons I know. And so that brings us once again to the conclusion of the Kill by Kill podcast. Hey, Becky, where can people talk to you if they want to on the internet?
If they want to.
Yeah. People might have very interesting questions for you.
About your shirtlessness.
About my shirtlessness, about how glistening my bod is at any given time.
We are on Twitter at We Write Good.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, you will find me hunched over a laptop, usually writing in my bed for some reason, because it's more comfortable.
If you want to find Becky, look for her bed. Yep. All right. Gina, where can people find you on the internet?
I write about 70s and 80s television, occasionally featuring the late, great Robert Urich at tuneintonight.wordpress.com.
That is correct. Check it out, people. Hey, you want to talk to us? There's a couple different ways you can do it. You can reach out to us on Twitter at KillByKillPod. If you have something longer than 140 characters to say, you can email us, killbykillpod@gmail.com. And as always, we would implore you, if you would be ever so kind, to rate and review us on iTunes. And if you do, people, well, I will read your review here on the air. Please include your favorite kill from the Friday the 13th series, and we'll shout you out here. And a couple people have done it, and we'll add them to this at a later time when I start editing the podcast. That's a making the sausage moment. And so that just about does it for us, for myself, for Gina, and for Becky. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. Kill by Kill is produced by We Write Good and is intended for entertainment purposes only. Friday the 13th is owned by Paramount Pictures. Jason is owned by New Line Cinema. No infringement is intended. Kill by Kill logo was designed by Josh Hollis. Visit him at joshhollis.com. The Kill by Kill theme was created exclusively for us by Revenge Body. Get the whole track and much, much more at revengebodymemphis.bandcamp.com today.